Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, I'll tell you what, I have really been looking forward to this. For those of you who are regular listeners, you know how much I love animals, especially dogs. We have two Scottish Terriers, and we've had a number of guests on the show that talk about animals and care. But I just recently was made aware of this wonderful publication, which I recommend highly, called Pause and Effect, and that's P-A-W-S, The Healing Power of Dogs. And I personally know about that, and my guest, Sharon Saxon, has had so many wonderful experiences with animals, and she's with us today. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you were a journalist and a television producer. You've worked for ABC, NBC, Court TV, Food TV. You've been all over the place, but you've always had a passion for writing. When did you decide that you were going to combine your love of dogs into this wonderful book that you've put together, Pause and Effect?
Well, you know, it, like many things, you kind of stumble into it. I am a journalist first and foremost by temperament, I think. And since I always loved dogs so much, I always was bothered when people said things that I didn't think you could back up, and I always wanted to know why. So when I heard a lot of the things that people say about how my dog does this for me, he makes me feel good, he does that, I thought, let me see what the science says about this. And I found so much to back up that, in fact, dogs are healing to us.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No question in my mind about that. Now, you have so many wonderful stories, but tell us about your critters.
I have a wonderful pack of dogs.
not one, folks, a pack. We have
There's 10 guys at my feet right now.
10? 10?
10, that's right.
Holy Moses, how do you ever get out of the house?
Well, we're very organized. We're very organized, and I have a wonderful dog sitter who takes care of things if I have to go without them. But I try never to go someplace without a dog, and I think I'm kind of known around my town and among my friends for, if you look in my purse, there's always a dog in there.
Now, what kind of dogs do you have?
I have Whippets, which are bigger. They don't go in the purse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have Brussels Griffons, which are 10 pounds and under.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll tell you, I just think that these stories that you have in here. Now, you used to be a show judge for dogs at the American
Kennel Club. I am a show judge for dogs.
Oh, you still are. Okay, good. All right. So you're still a show judge, and you do breed your Whippets and your Brussels Griffons. Wow, what an interesting life you have. Do you go regularly to Westminster in winter in New York?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm one of the television producers of Westminster.
Oh, how fabulous.
So I get the best seat in the house. I'm sitting right next to David Fry, the host, and helping him as it's going on live from New York.
Now, David Fry, mentioning his name, he wrote the foreword to your book. And David has this wonderful voice that everybody recognizes when he talks. Yes, I do watch the Westminster show whenever I can. We just love it. But he said that your book makes a very clear statement about how dogs are not only faithful and intuitive companions, but on a deeper level, they're spiritual guides who, in their resilience, intelligence, affability, courage, and perseverance, both model and support healthy living. And I just think that is absolutely the truth. It is something that I have seen so many situations when dogs make a difference. I have personally experienced some very unique happenings with animals myself. So their intelligence is just amazing, and I'm so thrilled. And that's one of the many things that comes through in your book about the service dogs, the therapy dogs. I mean, you've just got some fabulous stories in here.
Well, I've lived with dogs all my life, but until I started researching this book, I did not realize how much we underestimate them. Mm-hmm. There is so much there and they need our help to bring it out. And
yes.
That's what I saw when I was researching the service dogs and assistance dogs, which are dogs who help people with handicaps. It is absolutely amazing what they can be taught. And not only are they taught those things in a traditional way where you associate doing the thing with a reward, like, for instance, they teach the dog to turn the lights on because the handicapped person can't get up to the light
mm-hmm.
switch,
mm-hmm.
but they teach them that. But after a while, I see those dogs, they understand their person. They want to help their person.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see the dog go turn on the light before anyone tells him to. He knows, oh, it got dark. I'll turn the light on. And that's a very small example. But it was a shock to me to see how deeply the dog and person could understand each other. And yet I lived with dogs all my life and trained them and loved them. But there is something there. God has put a lot there, and we humans have to bring it out. It's our job.
I really was intrigued by your discussion in the book, the story in the book, about a dog I am not familiar with. I'm sure I've seen it, but I really didn't have an awareness of it. And then all of a sudden, right now, as I'm talking to you, there's something about a television special that I believe I saw this dog represented in. And he was a dog that was loved by the Aztecs, and he was a healing dog, and it's a Zolo, Z-O-L-O.
Yes.
Tell us about this phenomenal animal, and how far does it go back?
Well, I was looking to see, was the concept of healing dogs something new that we had thought up with new things people were doing, or was it an ancient thing? And immediately I found out about the Aztecs and the Xolo. It looks like Zolo, but they call it a Xolo. And the whole name is very strange. It's called a Xoloitzcuintle is the proper name, but we call them Xolos. And the Aztec priests bred this dog, and they believed it had healing powers. And when one of the people were sick and came to the priests, they placed four dogs on them. And the dogs have either no hair or very, very short hair, so they feel quite warm.
Mm-hmm.
And the person would sleep for several days with these dogs, and then they felt better. Well, it was magical, and the priest got all the credit. But guess what? If you put a heating pad on your sore shoulder or your sore tummy or your sore knee, it's going to increase the blood flow to that area because of the warmth, and it's going to break up the pain. So there's a scientific reason for what the Aztecs called magic.
And you have this wonderful story about this Xolo called Toaster and
yes.
a lady named Nancy. Share what happened with Nancy, because this is significant. It just shows how important the human and animal relationship is.
Well, and Nancy became disabled and was not a dog person, but she went to a friend, and the friend was so happy one day. She said, oh, I just got a Xolo puppy, and it's a rare breed from Mexico, and nobody knows about it, and hey, let me put it on your lap. And she put her wrist under the puppy, and after a few minutes, she noticed she had no more pain in that wrist, and she was shocked. And she saw immediately what the repercussions would be. If you had a heating pad that didn't need to be plugged in or recharged and could be with you all the time, somebody suffering as she was could get a lot of relief. So she went and got a dog, and she's the one who started an organization which actually places dogs with people now. And they train them to be a service or assistance dogs. Her dogs know the difference between a whole lot of things that look alike, like the telephone, the cell phone, the TV remote, the garage door opener, all these different little things. You can tell, she has two dogs now, you can tell them, and they go and they get it. And another thing, she told me they help with dressing. And I always heard that. And I just figured that the dogs brought the socks over to you.
Mm-hmm.
No, her dog knows how to hold the sweater. She puts her hand in it. The dog gets onto her and pulls the sweater up her arm. It's amazing what this dog knows. She puts her toe in the sock. The dog pulls the sock up her. I never knew a dog could be taught to do the things I've seen those dogs do.
You have, like I said, a story about Scotty's and the empathy between the owner and the dog. Now let's talk about whippets for a minute, because you breed them.
Yes.
What a whippet is, an animal that just loves to run.
Mm-hmm.
They're just exquisitely gorgeous. They're elegant.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They just remind me of a miniature thoroughbred in a way. That's my
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
And I just, you know, I loved this story about Amber,
yeah.
The little girl that chose one of your dogs. Tell us about Amber.
Well, the family came to my kennel, and they were getting a puppy for Amber because she had high grades and she'd done everything right. She was 11 years old. And they came, and I didn't know ahead of time that she had a handicapped brother who was, I think, 15 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was developmentally slow, and he had various disabilities. And among them, he had no social skills. He was unhappy all the time. And they came into the kennel, and he just said, "When can we go? I want to leave." And so they calmed him down. But I noticed that as Amber was meeting her puppy, I had a puppy running loose in the room around the kennel who no one ever chose. And his name was Captain. He was 6 months old. And usually the puppies I raise, by the time they're about 3 months old, maybe four,
mm-hmm.
someone's come, picked them out, and that's their puppy, and they go. But no one ever chose Captain, and one reason was that Captain always went underneath the chair or hid, which is very unlike a whippet. They're a very social dog. So her brother, Sean, sits down on the chair, and this Captain comes out, gets up, climbs up on his lap. I was completely shocked. So we looked, and when we saw it, Sean said, "Oh, don't, get down, get down." He pretended he didn't like it. And as soon as we looked away, he let him come back up. Well, as they were leaving, I said to the parents that I would never encourage somebody to get a dog if they weren't thinking of it, but that I had never seen the puppy act that way and
mm-hmm.
pick someone like that. So they went home, they thought about it, they came back, and they got this puppy for Sean, and it changed his life. He went from being an unhappy, kind of bitter, sad kid who had a lot of trouble at school and didn't have any friends, to the kid who had a dog who adored him. And he got to take that dog to school. He got to show the dog to the other kids. And Captain never wavered in his belief that Sean was the most special among all humans. And he stuck with him, and he made him feel special. And he brought him out of that shell he was in of not being able to reach people and touch people, to becoming someone who liked to talk to you because he could tell you about his dog. It was an absolutely amazing transition that that dog did for him.
I wanted to talk about one of the stories that you have. It's towards the back of your book. You've got the title chaptered, When the Dogs Go Marching In.
Uh-huh.
And this is about your beginning and also the beginning of Ruth and her husband, Bill. When he had to go to a nursing home, but they had been involved with taking animals into hospice environments and all kinds of things. Tell us about their story, because it is a very meaningful story, and animals have so much to give, absolutely so much to give, and Ruth's story is just incredible.
Yes. Well, nowadays everyone's getting to learn about therapy dogs in the...
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for the history of it, and when I went back and looked in the early 90s, this is one of the stories that I thought was really interesting. It was a very new idea back then, and what happened and still happens many places is that when someone goes into a nursing home, their dog, if it's not given to a family member who wants it, it goes to the pound.
Right.
And that breaks my heart to even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And but this was the early time, and so Ruth, her husband had to go into the nursing home, but she came every day and brought their poodle. And that moment when the poodle came in, her husband was happy. He picked up. He felt better. And then she noticed that all the other people who they ran into in their nursing home also felt better. And she just had very special permission to take the poodle to her husband. But she, after he passed away, she thought, let me see if I can do this for more people. And she formed a group with her church, and they trained their dogs how not to be spooked by wheelchairs and crutches and falling glasses and anything you might encounter in the hospital environment. And then they started to go once a week, and it was a tentative thing. Well, we'll try this. But they soon found that so many people benefited from this. And it became a regular thing to the point where now she lives in Panama City, and all of the hospitals and nursing homes in Panama City now have therapy dogs coming in. I'll tell you, I researched this, and there are five ways in which every person's dog is healing to them every single day. And that is that when you go home and see your dog, your heart rate is lowered, your blood pressure goes down. When you pet your dog, you get the muscle relaxation response begins, which is very important. When you touch your dog, it's just the power of touch, the same you would get in a hug from a human. But humans aren't always available for a hug all day, whereas your dog is. And the fifth one, which we're just now beginning to find out how important this hormone is, oxytocin. It's the nurturing hormone. And when you look at a dog you like, you get a release of oxytocin into your bloodstream, which just makes you feel better. And what I think is so great about dogs, you take your dog to the nursing home, and the people who don't even know him get these same benefits. And that's what they were seeing in the nursing homes, that the people picked up, they felt better. And now it's one of the things that animals can do for us.
You have a story in here about a dog, and I just laughed when I was reading it. It's an ugly dog, a Brussels Griffon.
Yeah.
Yes, and Mr. Gruffied Babayan. Gay is his owner, and this is a dog that was so contrary. I just love this story. I laughed because I've experienced some of this with Scottish Terriers.
Absolutely you would.
And I thought, yes, I really like this dog, and I like the owner. Tell us about Gay and this dog that just was so contrary. It was unbelievable.
Yes. She lives in New York City, and she adopted him and named him after a character in a Russian book, Gruffid Babayan. And so the little dog he's about 12 pounds. He has this long name. And she kind of accidentally got into the therapy dog movement because a friend wanted her to come as a support when she was taking her dog, which I think was a golden retriever, through the course. And so Gay said, well, okay, I'll come, but, you know I can't go through the course because my dog doesn't obey me. He doesn't ever do anything I say. So they went, and it just happened that that day there was a place open in the course. So they went through it, and Gay explained to them, there's no way I can do this because I've tried to teach him to sit, and I've tried to teach him to stay, and he won't. So they said, oh, well, it doesn't matter. The person, it didn't show up, so there's a spot open. So she said, okay. So she went in, and she gave him the command to sit and stay while they moved a wheelchair around, and he did it. He just sat there. And
I like
her
dog. That's such a good visual, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
The dog that has never obeyed any command in this class, and you want me to sit? Oh, certainly. Here I am.
Yeah. So, that's another one of dog's jobs is to make fools out of us, I think.
Oh, yes. I think to say, excuse me, I'm the boss here. Who do you think you are?
Right. So he ends up passing the course that day and got his certificate to be a therapy dog. And Gay said she was so shocked. She took the certificate home and she went back to the apartment And they went in, she took off his leash, and she looked at him, and she said, sit, stay. And he looked at her like, are you kidding me? I'm not doing that.
I love it.
So he never would do those things at the home, but they got an appointment to be at the children's hospital and to go in and visit kids, and he went in, and he was apparently just born for that job, because when they put him on a kid's bed, he stayed there, he looked at the kid, and he just gave all his little energy and heart to the child, and it benefited them greatly, and everyone could see it. So he became kind of a star, and he became such a good therapy dog that they decided to move him up and try therapy assistance. And what this is that when they have people who just can't do their therapy exercises, sometimes they had found bringing a dog in somehow helps. Who knows why, but it does. So she was in the children's hospital, and one of the things they work with a lot is children who lost the ability to walk and have to relearn to walk from an operation or an accident or something. So they had a child there who absolutely refused to walk because it hurt. And they wanted her to try and move through the pain, and then she'd get over the pain, but the child would not do it. So they brought in Mr. Gruffid Babayan, and they said to Gay, can you put him on this little walkway and tell him to back up? And she looked at the therapist. She said, I am so sorry, but he does not know how to do that. It won't work. And the therapist said, oh, dear, oh, all right, well, just put him on the walkway, and we'll try and do something then. So she put him on the walkway, and they put the little girl on the one end and told her to walk across, and then she could play with the dog. So she saw, so that for the first time, she took two steps. She was very eager to see the little ugly dog. And when she got up to Mr. Gruffid Babayan, he backed up. And the therapist looked at Gay like, well, why did you tell me he couldn't do that? And he backed himself up all the way across the walkway with the little girl following him. And when he got to the end, he sat down. And so then she sat down and they played together. And Gay just said, I don't know. I don't know who's talking to that dog.
He probably wanted to go see a psychiatrist.
He teaches himself, apparently, because he wouldn't do that when I told him to do it.
Oh, that is so funny. That is just so funny. Your book is filled with wonderful stories. One that I really wanted us to get into a little bit was about a Dr. Walker who, he and his wife, he was a scientist. His wife was a scent, S-C-E-N-T, scientist.
Right.
And they wrote an article and had it published in Applied Animal Behavior, Evidence of Canine Olfactory Detection of Melanoma. Now, there have been some television shows about this, and it is incredible. Let's go into that a little bit, because I think that, what is it, their sense of smell is 10,000 times better than ours?
Oh, you did read my book. Yep. That's Dr. Walker wanted to know what is true about the claim that dogs can smell so well. Because among dog owners, we say to each other, oh, a dog smells 10 times better, or he can smell 50 times better. And he needed to know for his scientific research, well, how much better is it? So he diluted a chemical in water to find out a human's level. And when he got it at 1 at 100, a human could still smell up to 1 and 100. And then he proceeded to do the same experiment with a trained dog, a very well-trained dog. It was a police dog, so he knew how to sniff and find a scent. And he kept on diluting and diluting and diluting, and he finally found that the rate of dilution was not 1 to 100, not 1 to 1,000, not 1 to... It was 1 to a million and more. In other words, a human could smell a drop of a chemical in a glass of water, but a dog could smell a drop of the chemical in a swimming pool of water. And it figured out that comes to, at a minimum, the dog was smelling 10,000 times better than the human.
Oh, absolutely. That's to, you know, the hounds have been known for that especially, but this is for any dog. And then you have, you know, your hunting hounds, and you have the different members of the hound team that have been used in police work to find people. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing.
Well, yes, and actually I have a very good story that about hounds and their ability to smell. The best in the canine world is the bloodhound.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have more scent receptors than any other dog. So some of the people who wanted to do the research about finding cancer and other illnesses said, well, obviously we should use bloodhounds because
mm-hmm.
they are the best at sniffing. So they use training methods, which are all very positive. You put down 5 petri dishes, you put your drop of cancer cell in one of them, and then when the dog goes over to that one, you go, oh, good dog, and you give him a treat, and you tell him how great he is. And then you put down 5 other petri dishes, and the dog goes, oh, well, let me find that one again. That worked out pretty well. And so they very easily taught the bloodhounds to sniff it, and they could do it terrifically. But what they found was when they started them in laboratory work, after about 2 weeks, the dogs didn't seem to be working out anymore. And what it is that the bloodhounds didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
A bloodhound very specifically likes to track. And
right.
they want to follow a scent, and at the end of it, they want to have something there, whether an item or a person or something. But that's what they're hardwired for. They're hardwired for finding something. So they just didn't think this laboratory work was interesting, and they couldn't be persuaded to do it as well as the best ones are the sporting breeds or the herding breeds, because
mm-hmm.
they have this intense cooperation that is from thousands of years with us, I think, that they want to please you. So they didn't mind that it wasn't following a scent. They just wanted to find the scent because you like it when they find it. So the labs, the retrievers, the spaniels, the German shepherds, things, dogs like that are the ones most often used these days.
And they detect cancer. And you tell the stories of different dogs in here that they would poke somebody's shoulder or tap a leg. They put a paw. Something was wrong. And until the human realized the dog is trying to communicate, and then have it checked, sure enough, it was a warning sign. And prostate cancer, there is some research being done on finding that, because it doesn't show itself. It's called a silent killer, unless you're fortunate enough to get into a physician at the right time. But it's really amazing how we are beginning to pay attention to animals, and in therapy work, I love the pot-bellied pig. I love the horse. I mean, there's birds. There are so many wonderful creatures, and dogs and cats, of course, are dearly loved in this type of what I call a healing that they bring in, because they just got such personalities. And some dogs aren't suited for that, but the ones that are, they make such a difference.
Right. And what gets me upset about... We now know that these dogs can find cancer at a rate none of our machines can.
Mm-hmm.
They can find it before a blood test, before an MRI, before an X-ray. You can take all your human machines and inventions that we have, but none of them can smell at the level of a million to one, and none of them have mucus, and they don't work the way the dog's nose work. And here the dog can do this, and yet we don't use it. What they found was that the dog would come to them and say, okay, there's cancer here. And they would go back and check with all those things, the blood work, the X-ray, and everything. They said, oh, we don't see it. We think the dog must be wrong. And the trainers always said, well, why don't you check back in a few months? And they always found the dog was right. But the problem was they couldn't find the cancer. We didn't have a machine that can find it. If a dog can do that, think of the implications for our medical bills, for instance.
No kidding. That's awesome. It'd be a lot cheaper.
Yeah. And Dr. Walker particularly says that one use that he feels so strongly would be good is that the problem we have with chemotherapy is that they don't really know when the chemotherapy has totally done its job. It's a very risky thing right now in hospitals, because they want to give you enough chemotherapy that it kills your cells, but not so much that it's making you really sick. But it's hard for them to know, is the cancer gone? Did it come back? And the patient has tremendous emotional stress during this time of trying to find out, is it there, is it not? And here we have a canine who you could take the samples to the canine. They would be able to tell you. Mm-hmm. Your machines can't tell you is it if in this urine sample or in this blood sample or in this breath sample, is there still cancer? But a canine could tell you, and that is not being done right now. And that could save a lot of people.
It certainly could. And I think that it gives the animals an opportunity to serve in a way that can make such a difference and would not be threatening to anyone. I mean, this is something that is so important. Animals
yeah.
have saved people's lives on other levels, but here is something that is so very common today, and to be able to detect something or something that's out of order. Wow, the old adage, you know, a pound
yeah.
of prevention is worth 400 pounds of cure.
Absolutely.
And I think this applies. Sharon, we have run out of time. This has been absolutely a joy having you on the air. And I want people to know that her book, Pause, P-A-W-S, and Effect, is the book that you want to get. If you are an animal lover, this is a must read. And she's got a website, Healing Power of Dogs, Healing Power of Dogs at mac.com, M-A-C.com. Sharon, I wish you continued success. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's a pleasure. I love to talk about the healing power of dogs.
Oh, I can imagine. I do, too. It's a joy. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget Pause and Effect and her website, Healing Power of Dogs at Mac.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by the majesty of the queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with sturdy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Wasn't that fun? Oh, I've got some wonderful animal stories, too, I want to share with you that I've found out about. But if you want to give me a call, telephone lines are now open. Telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. All I need is your first name or your initial. And then, of course, I'd love to know where you're calling in from. And after that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and if you'd like to ask a question, you'll be able to do that too. Okay, now, I wanted to give some information out. You've heard the ad for the Washington Renaissance Fair. It's the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Now, this event I've participated in for 10 years, and I absolutely love the people that put it together because this is fun. You step through the castle entrance into another time, another space. People are in costume. It's absolutely awesome. However, I have free tickets. I have 12 free tickets, and you can get one if you're in the state of Washington, if you're coming in from outside and you'd love to go to this event, which is the first 3 weekends of August. I want you to send me an email, and in the subject line, put ticket for the Renaissance, or you can call me at my office. Either way, I don't care how you do it or do both, but let me get these tickets to you because there are 12 family passes that I have, and I'd like for you and your family and your friends to be able to go. So call me at 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852, or email me at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. Do that, and we'll be ready to go. And I'll get that out to you in the mail so that you'll have it in plenty of time. Don't wait till the last minute. I only have 12. So do give me a call if you're interested in having a free pass to this wonderful event, the first three weekends in August. I'd love to have you come by and say hello, by the way. My booth will be the one that has the large red lions on a yellow background. Also, I want to say we're getting more stories for my book that I'm working on, which has 100 stories, which that's my goal, to have 100 stories from different people about their paranormal, psychic, spiritual experiences. And it's just a joy to be able to get these stories because they're all so different. Everybody has had something that's been very special and unique for them. So I'd love to hear from you. So do send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Put in the subject line story for Donna's book, and that way I will be able to identify it. All right, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat today, 888-815-9756. Quick like a bunny, Jonathan Goldman, the man that has this wonderful understanding of music and its healing capacities and how it can be used in therapy, he's not able to be with me tomorrow. So tomorrow's going to be an open mic day. That means for the full hour, you will have 100% opportunity to call me at any time during the hour to have a reading with me. If you so desire, we're going to have all kinds of odds and ends of information to share with you. Thursday, we have got two dynamic people from walks of life most of us would never even consider. Who are they and what do they do? Well, Pam Puree is a bail bondsman, and Mike Darkside Beek, he is a former police officer who, after being seriously injured, became a bounty hunter. We're going to be talking about their fascinating book, Betrayal, Murder, and Greed. This is an awesome piece of publication. And then we're going to be talking on Friday with John Paul Thornton. This young man is so gifted artistically. He talks about art and courage, and I think you will just love the stories that he shares about how art can make a difference in one's life, in healing, in so many ways. So we've got a great lineup of guests. And by the way, if you want to find out who's coming up, just go right into bbsradio.com, go to Station 1, check out the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll be able to pull up the guest list as it is scheduled for the month. And you'll be able to see who's coming up and what the subject matter is about and all that kind of good stuff. Give me a buzz if you want to chat today, 888-815-9756. If you were blind and you were an artisan, what kind of work do you think you would do? It's a question that I don't know that many of us would even have a clue about how to answer. I can remember as a little girl watching a program about a man who sculpted people, and his sculptures were, and he was blind, his sculptures were breathtakingly, magnificently accurate, but superbly done. Never had any vision. Well, there's a man, John Cook, who has done masterpieces in wood for more than 30 years. Now, he's in Tennessee. He never sees the finished product because he's blind. Now, he lost his sight to glaucoma when he was a child. Now, what he does to make his magnificent sculptures, he uses a measuring stick and gauge blocks with braille marking. to produce intricately designed furniture. He said his hands are his eyes. You see, we have so many sensory capacities. And when all of our senses are working, we make it do its duty as it is required without thinking about it twice. But when you go without a sense, then you find you have to utilize your other senses more acutely. I learned something many years ago, a gentleman by the name of Lloyd. He had done quite a bit of study about kahuna magic. And he was a big supporter and, I would say, just an ardent fan of Max Freedom Long, who wrote a book called The Secret Science Behind Miracles. Now, what happened with Lloyd is that he happened to go out dumping garbage one day, and he sees this book sticking up out of somebody else's garbage can. Well, he's a book lover, very well educated. He goes over and he sees this title, The Secret Science Behind Miracles. And this is a pretty left-brain guy. But he picks up the book. It had just been dumped on top of this garbage can. So he picks up the book, and he takes it home, and he starts to read it. As he's reading it, he begins to ask questions. I wonder if I could do some of the things that Max talks about here. Now, Max Freedom Long was the protege of Dr. Brigham. There is a museum in Oahu, Hawaii, that is dedicated to Dr. Brigham. You won't find anything about Dr. Brigham's studies into the paranormal and or the understanding of healing that the old-time kahunas had. However, Lloyd was really interested in this book. So he started developing his own experiments. I had the opportunity, because of a friend who was a psychic herself, she said, "Donna, I'm taking these classes. I think you'd really enjoy it. Why don't you join me?" She told him about me, and he invited me to come in and be a participant. Lloyd taught people who were blind, never had any vision, to see. That's right, and it can be done. And regrettably, he had to stop his classes, but I'll never forget going through some of the exercises. He had designed a particular layout in his garage, and he had lights that were in the ceiling. He worked with color. But what he would do, he'd blindfold you, and he'd make sure that you did not have any capacity of seeing anything. He was very, very much scientific in everything that he did. And blindfolded, he would tell you where to walk, where to put your feet. And you would tell him if you felt anything, saw anything. It was quite an interesting exercise. And I got to the point where I could see the lights that he turned on in different places, and I could point to them. I had no vision at all. But the nerves in the skin, your nervous system does an adaptation. So whenever you find out about someone who maybe has lost their vision or there are things that you wonder, how in the world did they do that? Remember, you are a total sensory package, and you can adapt many times in ways that you would never have imagined possible. So things can be done, and I like to think that though Lloyd, I think he's passed on now, is not and did not pass on what he had discovered, he did learn something from Max Freedom Long's book that enabled him to help a couple of blind people see. And they did all kinds of demonstrations of how someone that had been born with no vision could see, just like you and I. Amazing stuff. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, this is a great time to do it. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I wanted to share some special animal stories. You know, we started off talking about the healing power of dogs, paws and effect, but there are so many wonderful creatures in this world, and even if they're wild creatures, as we would describe them, they're fascinating to learn about. And this is about a baby lynx and a tapir. Now, a tapir is an interesting creature. It has that sort of hooked over nose, and the babies are just adorable. But when it's full grown, guess what? It's an 800-pound plus darling. But in Nashville, Tennessee, when they had these heavy, heavy floods this year, it was just unbelievable. They hardly got any news coverage, but those people really, really had a horrific disaster. Babies were being born at the Nashville Zoo. Can you imagine the challenge of that? A baby lynx was born the weekend of the floodwaters, followed by a baby tapir. Now, these two births during this flooded weekend, they said, the people that worked there at the zoo said they thought that the barometric pressure change from the storms actually had a lot to do with these two animals giving birth at the same time, because they said, in their observation, animals are affected very strongly by weather and pressure changes. Now, Jim Bartu is the zoo's spokesman. They were fortunate. The animals were inside enclosures when the births occurred, so the babies and their moms were safe and dry. However, the staff members were working frantically using sandbags, trying to hold back the water from flooding some of their exhibits. They didn't want to lose their animals. So the newborns being kept in indoor enclosures are just wonderful, but the two animals have survived the experience, and they're just absolutely a wonderful addition to the zoo. But then you've got a dog, talking about dogs earlier, saving 6 orphaned zoo babies. Now, this is an African painted dog that ended up having puppies, and only 50% of these dogs survived.
survive the first 30 days. And if these African painted dogs end up losing the mother, they usually will all die off. Obviously, the mom isn't there to feed them. Well, at the Pittsburgh Zoo, when the mother died, and her name was Vega, as she was delivering her litter of pups, the staff realized that they had to hand-raise the babies. They weren't going to live without their mother. But they had another dog, and this was a surrogate. And these African painted dogs, they weren't sure were going to take to another animal. Well, there is this beautiful black dog. Her name is Honey. She is a homeless, mixed-breed domestic dog who was living in a nearby animal shelter. She had just finished weaning a litter of pups of her own. So when the animal shelter found out about this situation, they brought Honey over to the zoo to meet the pups. And you know, these pups took to her immediately, and they started nursing right away. They're big and healthy now. They're on exhibit at the zoo. And do you know what even happened that was more special? There was a zoo staff member who fell in love with the dog at the shelter, Honey, and she took her home. Honey had a new home. Isn't it a wonderful story? I just love it. There's so many fascinating tales. I think we really make a big mistake when we forget that animals do have feelings. And I know I've encountered individuals, and you might be one of them, that said, they don't have any feelings. They're dumb animals. No, they're not. Just because they cannot communicate with us in our language does not mean they cannot communicate. Just as we were sharing with you in the first half hour, dogs have a phenomenal way. Cats do too. I've even known guinea pigs to have their own personality. I think the Eddie Murphy movie of Dr. Doolittle is a hoot. I love it. I think it's just absolutely wonderful. But I think it is a very much, very, very strong reality. And more people are finding that they actually, if they take the time to listen, can actually communicate with animals. That's one of the things that's in the book, Pause and Effect. Someone training dogs by using pictures. Sound wacky? You'd have to read it to find out more. Well, I know we're just about out of time, and I wanted to share just a thoughtful story here with you. This is about a gentleman by the name of Ralph, and he is an avid golfer. And being a grandpa, often his grandkids will plead with him to go with them to the golf course. But he had sort of lost interest in golfing. Why? Because his lifelong friend, Harold, who had been his golfing partner for so many years, by golly, it was just a wonderful association. Well, Harold passed away. And, you know, Ralph just missed it. This had been his buddy. They had grown up together. They had gone through so many things together. How do you handle that? How do you come out of that kind of a slump, if you will? Well, I'll tell you what. What he did, he decided he would go with his grandkids. They were really bugging him. So he said, okay. He said, you know, Harold and I were such a good team. I could hit a shot into the rough, and he'd inevitably counter it with one that landed right in the center of the fairway. He said his shot always landed a little bit closer to the hole than mine did. And it was always that way. Well, he went out playing with his grandkids, went to retrieve the ball. And he thought, yeah, there's an extra ball here on the green. Wonder what it is. Picked up the ball. And stamped on the ball was HDR, the initials of his very dear friend, Harold Dean Roland. I know, that's a good story. I like that. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever forget that you have a connection in life that is uniquely yours. And you are the person that makes that uniqueness even greater and more special if you are attentive to it. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on PBSRadio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.